You're listening to Rambling Business, the only multimedia podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking about serving Native American cultures on Route 66. We continue our Route 66 series in Flagstaff by popping next door to Galaxy Sales Outfitters and James Burns.
We literally did pop next door.
Yeah.
I mean, we really just popped next door. It was like,
what happened?
Out, did you turn around?
Someone step on you? Anyway, join us as we tell the story that starts with escaping Belgian Jews during World War II who ended up settling down in Flagstaff. Of course, coming your way are our tax tales and some travel tips, so stay tuned.
Izzy Seinbenberg's father was a jeweler in Belgium when Hitler came to power. You know, I just saw another movie last night. You know, it's just amazing what goes on. World War II, all these little stories you hear about.
Mm-hmm.
This is another one. You know, all these people have these amazing stories of how they were trying to escape death
yeah.
in World War II. Anyway, he saw the Nazi menace and the new order that was going on in Germany. And so to save his family, he knew he had to get them out. So he split up his kids. They were the ages 12 to 23. And he set each one off in a different route to France.
No.
Isn't that amazing? Imagine sending a 12-year-old out. I mean, I can't imagine sending you to the store when you were 12 years old.
That's true. Mostly because I wouldn't go if you told me to. But
that's right. But they went in different routes to France.
And but I guess that makes it so there's less risk for each of them.
That's exactly why he did it. They had a better chance of surviving if they were not grouped together.
Yeah, because it's easier to hide one person than five people or whatever.
Yeah. And so what he did is he got them eventually to the United States. But what he gave them, each one, was a diamond because he was a jeweler
mm-hmm.
to pay their way. So they would cash a diamond and they would use that currency in order to do what they had to do.
Yeah.
Which is amazing because that's the second story I told him that I heard about somebody using diamonds to get out of a repressive regime. Another one was
small portable wealth.
Right. Another one was somebody I knew whose father was a jeweler in Armenia. And the Armenians were trying to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was Soviet Russia at that time or
it
Turks,
was the Turks.
Turks. Yeah, I don't know what they were trying to escape from. But the daughter, the little daughter, like the four-year-old, had a crayon box, but it had a false bottom with a few diamonds in it.
Wow.
And that's how they got out. So that's like I told him, that's the second story I've heard about people using diamonds to get away. But anyway, so he did split up his kids, and the family reunited in New York, where Izzy's father fed his family by tinkering with watches and eventually establishing a jewelry business.
Well, yeah, those are both kind of, they're similar, small detail work.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got this type of style of a small business person that can work on one small genre of business, but it expands to different kinds of things, whether it be watches or jewelry or whatever.
Well, a lot really back then, watches were jewelry a lot of the time. They were like men's jewelry.
Yeah, like 14 jewel watches. Or
14 carat gem watches.
No, they have jewels in them.
They have 14 jewels, but there's only 12 hours. Where were the other two?
I don't know. I'm an accountant. I count, but I don't count time.
But you don't count where.
Unless it's my timesheet.
Yeah.
And when, so in the 1950s, the son of this person that came from Belgium, Izzy, loved to travel, and he left for South America. He returned to the great American West after traveling, and he fell in love with Flagstaff and the Native American people.
Hmm.
That's the 1950s.
I wonder if he traveled to Chile. Because they have like deserty environments too.
Yeah, and they also have indigenous people down there too. Like we saw in Ecuador.
Everywhere.
Right? Yeah, everywhere. Yeah, I guess everybody's indigenous somewhere. Anyway, he loved dealing with the Native Americans. So he opened up Galaxy Sales with his stepbrother in 1949 as a clothing shop. However, upon buying out his stepbrother in 1956, he changed the store to supplying only the Native American culture. He learned how to fix saddles and specific things that they needed for their culture. For example, you know, we had horses.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had our Australian saddles put together, they actually took the bottom of them and they actually carved them so they fit my horse's back exactly.
Wow.
And that's what they did with your mom's too. So even though, so my saddle went with, no, I'm sorry, your mom's saddle went with her horse. Mine's still sitting in the garage. I got to sell it. Mm-hmm. but it was carved for the horse. So I imagine Izzy would do this too, mm-hmm. you know, to try to make them fit those horses. There's also pelts used in ceremonies and pigskin used to make the dream catchers.
Oh, that's what the little threads are made out of.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And then they would use cottonwood for Kachina dolls. Now, you've seen the Kachina dolls we mm-hmm. have in our house, right? Mm-hmm. So that's cottonwood. And those are really, really well designed. But he was a very bright guy because he spoke 8 languages in addition to Navajo. And as you know, Navajo is very, very difficult language. Mm-hmm. It was so difficult is that they used for the code breakers.
Yeah, the wind codes. Talkers.
Yeah, and in World War II, they used the Navajo language.
Mm-hmm.
But the Native Americans were poor. So this was a good outlet for them because they couldn't afford to import items from different places around the country. It was right here in their backyard. And he wasn't going to gouge them because he liked them.
Yeah.
So Izzy's stepson, James, is a guy I met.
Mm-hmm. The third generation.
Yes. Yeah, right. In our story, it is. And he took over the business and continued the relationships with the Native Americans. Now, I think James said that Izzy's goddaughter was going to take over the business, but I guess, you know, her family situations, it just was going to work out. So mm-hmm. he didn't want to see it go away because it was just a great business with a great culture, and the Native Americans really needed them. And so he had already been at the shop many, many times and kind of worked there off and on. So he just took it over. So he continues the relationships and keeps the legacy going. And it's not just with the Navajo, it's with the Comanche, the Hopi, and the Pueblo. So all the Native Americans, they all have different cultures and mm-hmm. need different things. And he and their shop are the ones that supply it.
And if you're interested about learning more about the shop, you can find out more at www.galaxyleather.com. You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips. www.ramblingbusiness.com. Now it's time for our tax tale, where we tell you about strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales, tax tales, tax tales, tax tales, tax tales.
Tax tales, a woo.
And since we are talking about a Jewish immigrant from Belgium during Nazi occupation, we thought we'd talk a little bit about Belgium and their taxes. Not a tax on chocolate, which is, I guess, would be the thing that most people think of. You know, Belgian chocolate.
Or Van Gogh's.
Or, yeah. Well, there's obviously a lot of taxes on Van Gogh, wherever he goes. The Walloon region in Belgium is famous for its tax on barbecue. Basically, if you cook outside, you have to pay a tax. The reason they wanted to tax people is because there was a study that said every time you cook outside, mm-hmm. It releases 100 grams of carbon dioxide in the surrounding atmosphere. And since they're concerned about global warming, they decided to tax this thing. Mm-hmm. Thus, if the inhabitants of Wallonia wanted to cook in the backyard barbecue, they're forced by the state treasury to pay around 20 euros, which, you know, which is weird because in America, like, that's...
Yeah.
You would be out of business real soon. Anyone would be.
I wonder if they just give a burger to the inspector.
Yeah, I don't know, because they might still tax you. Inspectors are kind of sticklers for rules. The tax is provided for each use of a special oven or grill. Control over the observance, which seems like it'd be really hard to figure out, is done by air patrols that have special thermal cameras to make sure people aren't doing illegal barbecuing.
Yeah, but you just drive down the street and you go, I smell like somebody's barbecuing. How many times have you done that?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, that's good enough. Right.
Yeah, just the inspector's nose instead of fancy thermal cameras. Now it's time for our travel tip, where we tell you what fun things you can do around the Route 66 area.
In Winslow, Arizona, there's a bronze sculpture of Glenn Frey of the Eagles standing on the corner.
In Winslow, Arizona.
Right. Just as the song says, and take it easy. So we have a picture of that on our website, and you can drive over there, and there's a big Route 66 shield in the middle of the street, and they have Eagles music playing out loud.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's very vintage because they have soda jerk type of thing, and, mm-hmm. and all these different antique type things there. And yeah, so everybody's going around there. There's actually two statues of him, I think. It was him both.
What, one on each side of the road? So one a wink at him so he'll hop into your truck?
So you have one of him when he wrote the song. He had long hair, longer uh-huh. hair. And there's one other one with him standing with a guitar, I think, when he's much older.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the back is a picture drawing on the wall of it's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford slowing down to take a look at me.
Mm-hmm.
There's a picture of a woman in a flatbed Ford. But of course, you know, right there, it looks like a window, you know, so it's kind of cool. So it's a good place to go and stop when you're on Highway 40 and jump off the Route 66, which runs parallel with it, because it's a great place to stop. And it's the only place in the country that I know of that has anything from a song that's right on the corner.
Except for Graceland, maybe.
Well, you got to go into Graceland and all the stuff in Graceland. But this is actually out in the middle of the street.
Yeah, it's a little more public.
Yeah.
And now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you how you can take steps to implement what we've been talking about on the podcast. The first thing to think about is if you're taking over a business from an older relative, which, you know, usually is how people take over family businesses.
And we've met quite a few people on our podcast that have done that.
Yeah, the multi-generational family right. business. Try to do it when they're still aware of the business. I mean, as people get older, their memory can go and some people can suffer from dementia. And in this case, James's stepdad was 93 and was suffering from dementia, which hurt transferring over the business because, you know, you can't really get a good groundwork of what has to be done if someone's not in their complete mind.
Right. And the second thing is that, and this is what actually came from James. This is not my words. He says, if you love it, you can't give up on the dream. So you have to adapt.
Yeah, it's good advice.
And that's what he did. I mean, he walked into this thing where his stepfather was getting much older. It was a great business, but you know, it hadn't been managed as well as it could have because of his age.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had to adapt and do things to get it back on the right course. And it's a thriving business now. We walked in there, it was fantastic. There was people coming in there while we were there. And when we left, there was more people coming in. It was great.
The third thing to think about is you have to nurture relationships as a small business. Some of the poorest segments of our population have some of the most loyal relationships with their retailers.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, higher income sections, people are always looking for a deal because they have the ability to go look out for other deals. So nurturing relationships, whether it's with poor segments or just any family business, is so important because as a small business person, you work within a community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it works.
And, you know, that even works in big cities, too, because there's like boroughs.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
Areas that are culturally concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
For example, do you remember that one time we did the headshots?
Mm-hmm.
And we went to somewhere around Highland Park, and we happened to stop early at that one store, the grocery store or something.
Yeah.
And I think we got drinks or something. We walked in there, and there was food I have never seen anywhere.
Mm-hmm. It was a Mexican market, right?
That's right. But it was, I mean, even in the Mexican markets where I live,
mm-hmm.
This was really geared towards those people in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was great. There was a lot of good food.
Yeah.
Now it's time for a question from one of our listeners. Aaron writes in, how do I open a bank account for a corporation?
Aaron, it is very easy. So don't let any banker scare you. Just tell them you know better.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've been listening to this podcast.
Tell them Rick sent me.
That's right. That's right. And show them my picture with the beard.
Yeah.
All you need is two things. Articles of incorporation, which you file with the state. So you're going to get back a piece of paper from the state. This articles of incorporation is going to be stamped with a number, filing date. And the second thing is your federal ID number. And that is usually received. You could do that online, but you get that from the U.S. government by mail. But you could do it online and get your number and print it out. and it's an SS4, I think, is a form. And so once you get those two things, your article of incorporation and your federal ID number, you can walk in there, but they're going to ask you to make a deposit because you're opening an account. So at least bring $10.
Yeah. That's all we have for this week. Tune in next week when we finish our Route 66 series by climbing into an Arizona meteor crater to learn how a failing prospecting venture turned into a geological marvel.
Super cool.
Super cool. A rock from space.
Yes.
But till then, I'm Brandon.
And this is Rick. And thank you for letting us get into your business no matter where it is. Our music and podcast was produced by my son, Devin S. Norris. For all your music, composition, and podcast needs, check out devinsnorris.com.